Welcome to Federal Insights for September, a new approach in IT modernization, sponsored by Appian.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. IT modernization is perhaps the hottest topic in government today. It's one of those goals that everyone agrees is needed, but how to get there is another matter. Many federal IT executives are taking different paths to fit their agency's needs. One of them is the Homeland Security Department. Federal News Network's Jason Miller recently spoke with John Zangardi, who is DHS's Chief Information Officer, to learn where his agency is with its strategy.
We have not changed on the initial strategy we set out. We fundamentally believe that a hybrid, traditional, on-premises and cloud IT approach that's multi-cloud, meaning multiple cloud service providers, multiple infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service providers is the best approach to meet the DHS enterprise requirements and further our strategy to support any early adopters and further on downstream for the department. The big thing for us right now is to take a look at where we've had successes. And most recently, we completed consolidating down at Stennis Space Center. There's a data center down there. We closed out two zones, zones A and B. Of those zones, we moved out 229 applications, 74 of those applications from DHS HQ, CBP, CISA, FPS, OneNet, TSA, CIS, moved to other parts of that data center. But from ICE, 155 applications migrated to the cloud. 79 were in production. 145 of those were SharePoint sites. So here's the key thing. And when you talk about cloud, this is one of the big advantages. ICE retired 853 pieces of hardware, right? That's savings, that's power, that's everything we care about. So our focus right now is within the HQ organization. I'm going to start with training. We've held two cloud stand-down days where we were doing online training. And the initial phase of this is to focus on creating a general understanding of what cloud offers to my workforce. So this is about the OCIO workforce. We're hitting about 97% on the training, which is pretty darn good, knock on wood. The next phase of the training will be starting to focus more clearly on the people who will be executing work and going to sort of, if you will, from a 101 kind of college course on cloud to a 202 college course on cloud. And we want to get to a, if you will, a 302 college course on cloud. So the last phase will be really focusing on the people who have to deliver the services and the exact training they need, including certifications. On the security front, my CISO team is very involved in helping us streamline the ATO process and working through what we need to do to ensure the security in the cloud. I will tell you the biggest concern I have about security in the cloud is configurations. When we put something in the cloud, how can we assure that the pathway to the cloud is fully secure? And that's when you start focusing on what does the internet connection look like or TIC 3.0 look like? We're going to begin our move to take our TIC out of one of our data centers and move it into one of the local points of presence. We're looking at the ATO process and finding the best way to streamline that process to make things go more quickly. And we're also looking at ways of streamlining our ability to procure cloud services. And we're working that last piece very closely with Soraya Correa from the Chief Procurement Office in DHS. So we've got a lot going on. We're very focused on getting into the cloud in an agnostic sort of way. I believe that there are advantages there for the DHS enterprise and government in moving to the cloud. We just have to do it in a smart way that looks at what we're moving and where it should be. Should it be on-prem? Should it be in the cloud? Is it information as, infrastructure as a service, or is it something more like software as a service? And making sure we look through these things and understand what we're doing and execute it in a way that's successful.
Lot there to unpack. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. You talk about the multi-cloud strategy. In many ways, that strategy is required because you have already throughout DHS, whether it's headquarters or the components, so much is already in the cloud. You take USCIS or CBP that you couldn't just say, we're going to go to one cloud. Not that you would. That's the thought process of why multi-cloud makes the most sense for you guys.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I think when I got here, people were already beginning to move to the cloud. So we didn't determine which cloud they were going to go to. They had determined that ahead of that. So we need to have in place a strategy that makes sense for the components. Here's what's important from the component perspective, accomplishing their mission. And let me just take a second and think about many ways that DHS touches the average taxpayer's life. You show up at the airport, you're going to go through TSA, right? They're going to screen you as a passenger to get you on board. You come back from an overseas trip, you're going to get screened by Customs and Border Protection. Importing and exporting of goods in and out of our nation works through our network. It is very important that these services be available. And the components put a lot of effort into determining where they should be and what works best for them. So in some cases, latency may have been a factor. In other cases, cost may have been a factor. So they work through those problems. So for me to come along and say, no, thou must go here, really didn't work within the context of the DHS mission set.
So if you have the multi-cloud approach, are you looking for some way to manage those clouds, or are you giving the agency, the components within DHS, kind of a set of standards that they must adhere to? Like, how is that multi-cloud approach playing out?
So we provide standards to the components that they have to manage to. How they decide to do that management, either through a system integrator or with their own employees, is really up to them. The main concern I have from my perspective as the OCIO is mission accomplishment and security of the data that's placed within the cloud. And those are the main things that I think any CIO should be concerned with. How they manage it, as long as they're getting the mission done and they're doing it in a secure fashion, I'm not going to get too excited. Now, for DHS HQ, we are going to rely upon a managed service approach to do ours, and we'll be laying that out here shortly as we work through all the details here.
That's John Zangardi, CIO for the Homeland Security Department, speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. Hear more from this interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Need help accelerating your IT modernization efforts? Look no further. Appian is the leading low-code provider for the federal market, helping agencies simplify application development and leverage existing IT investments to deliver new solutions. Appian's secure, reliable, and scalable FedRAMP-certified platform comes with the Appian Guarantee, your solution created and deployed in just 8 weeks. Learn more at appian.com/appian-guarantee. appian.com/appian-guarantee.
We continue our interview with Department of Homeland Security CIO John Zangardi. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jason Miller about DHS's IT modernization efforts.
So I know managed services is one of those topics that gets a lot of attention, but probably something you kind of shake your head at a little bit and go, what's the big deal? It's something we've been doing and the government's been doing for quite a while. So two quick questions on managed services so we don't go too deep into it. When you say we're going to be laying out that approach of some kind of acquisition strategy or some kind of draft RFP of sorts?
So the draft RFP is not yet ready. So Jason, you're right. We talked a little earlier about this and I shook my head at it because if you look back at my history, I've been involved in managed services from the earliest days of NMCI, Navy Marine Corps Internet. So for me, it's, well, that's nothing new. So we're working very closely with the chief procurement officer on laying out a strategy for data center one on Estenes, data center two in Southern Virginia, and other anchor points within DHS, such as St. Elizabeth's or Mount Weather. So we're beginning to put that strategy together. An RFP is unlikely it would be the first step in that. It would most likely be an RFI. I would think maybe late fall we might have something out on the street, but I don't want to make that as a hard and fast date because between now and then there's a lot of work. And let's not forget, the fiscal year is about to close out, and there is, as you know from being around government for a long time, as you get to the end of the fiscal year, there's a big bump in workload.
Absolutely. I read somewhere just recently where the end of the fiscal year 19 could potentially be one of the busiest ones specifically for IT in terms of contracts and money to be spent and things like that. So DHS, I'm sure, is no different. The other piece of managed services that I think is interesting that we just go down that path just briefly with is when you talk about managed services, it's a government-owned contractor-operated model. Is it a contractor-owned contractor-operated model, or is that not decided yet?
It's not fully decided yet. I've actually been part of both GoCo and CoCo, and there's advantages and disadvantages to either. I think we need a little bit more time to flesh out the strategy and how we want to approach it. But like I said, I've been through both and I could see advantages to either. I think we just need time to think about the details.
All right. So something obviously to keep looking out for, as you said, maybe the fall, maybe a little bit later on in the year, we will keep an eye out for it. The other piece that you talked about when it comes to cloud and IT modernization is the application rationalization piece. Can you walk me through that a little bit and the process you went by to really decrease the number of applications and or, for instance, you mentioned one of the components had 145 different SharePoint sites. That must have just drove you a little crazy to see how much duplication that was.
Yeah. So I have a lot of history on application rationalization. And Jason, you probably remember when we first started talking about data center consolidation. I forget how many years ago that was.
Maybe 10 or so, right?
Give or take. I'll give or take. That. Yeah. But one of the things that was really interesting was sitting around leadership tables back then and talking about application rationalization. And let me just put a little bit different spin on it. So I will liken that to business processes. And here's what I mean. If your applications are very similar but have small differences, why do you have so many? That implies a lot of extra work and cost to the government, right? Initially, I will say people really had a hard time putting their heads around that, and there was that we used to call it hug your server mentality. It was kind of a hug your application mentality. So fast forward, you know, 5-10 years later, and I really get a different sense from the people around who own those applications. They fundamentally understand that drives cost and it drives security vulnerabilities if you're not maintaining those applications. So the mindset regarding change management and business processes is completely different than it was 5-10 years ago. And that's really a positive sign. I'm not, Jason, saying it's perfect, but what I'm saying is we've made a lot of progress in shifting the conversation in a way that people are now, you're right, that's what I need to do. I need to get rid of this application because that one over there is close enough, and if I just shift how I'm doing business, I can make that work. It is really a different conversation today than it used to be.
And that's the key piece that you bring up is if I change the way I do business. Before, it was change the application to meet my business needs. And I think that's the other thing that has shifted as well is, hey, my business processes, you know, they're probably okay, but they could be better. I can make them, you know, more standardized. I can make them better so they deliver on my needs in a better way. Is that the other big change you've seen as well?
So, yeah, I think what we're seeing from folks is in this willingness to shift things. So there's a lot of examples out there where I could think of in the past where we were looking at updating a system for foreign military sales and how difficult it was for people to accept the latest and greatest. Not because the latest and greatest was new or had color screens. It was because they had to change how they were doing things. Right. But we could not maintain the security on that old system. This was about moving to a new system with better capability, more interoperability with the rest of the systems and government that it would have to interface with. So people are recognizing that bigger thought process and they're beginning to shift their mindset there. So I think it's good.
John Zangardi is Chief Information Officer for the Homeland Security Department, speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. We'll have the rest of our interview with him after one more quick break. I'm Eric White.
Need help accelerating your IT modernization efforts? Look no further. Appian is the leading low-code provider for the federal market, helping agencies simplify application development and leverage existing IT investments to deliver new solutions. Appian's secure, reliable, and scalable FedRAMP certified platform comes with the Appian Guarantee, your solution created and deployed in just 8 weeks. Learn more at appian.com/appian-guarantee. appian.com/appian-guarantee.
Here is the third and final part of our interview with John Zangardi, the Homeland Security Department CIO. He spoke with Federal News Network's Jason Miller.
John, before break, we were talking about your cloud strategy, part of your IT modernization. You mentioned application rationalization. There's some great numbers there. I won't try to go through them all, but a couple of things that stood out to me was this idea of moving applications from components and headquarters to your data center, but then also reducing and retiring. Like, for instance, you mentioned ICE retired 853 pieces of hardware, huge savings, power, more security. You also talked about moving 229 apps. So what is the strategy going forward when it comes to app rationalization and continued consolidation?
Okay, so the way we're approaching it at HQ is we've established the Cloud Center of Excellence, CCOE, right? And that basically forms how we as a leadership team at HQ talk through how we want to get to the cloud and what we want to do in it. So to say it's a formalized membership would be incorrect. I meet every 2 weeks with my direct reports, my CTO, my folks who do applications in the cloud movement, my CISO, and my operations folks to go through and talk about issues. So you brought up a couple things. We talked a little bit about the consolidation we did down at Stennis and DC1 from Zone A and B into the four remaining unclassified zones I have there and to the cloud. So what we're looking at next is what do we do at DC2 in Southern Virginia? And we're beginning to formulate that plan. So when you look at the CCOE group, I'm looking to them to begin organizing the process by which we move. So within DC2, we have applications and systems from HQ, and those include applications from the other CXOs within DHS. So I'm talking about the chief procurement officer, the chief financial officer, even our Chico. So how do we go after those first? And what I'll tell you is I'll give you the classic IT line. We're going to eat our dog food first. So we're going to start with the CIO applications in DC2. And then once we eat our dog food, we'll start moving on to others. But there's other organizations from the DHS enterprise within DC2. And we've got to start working closely with those organizations, those components, to begin understanding their move to get out of there. And that's very important. What is their decision matrix? Are they going to move to DC1 or some other on-prem data center? Are they going to move to the cloud? What are their plans for disaster recovery? All those factors have to be worked through, and we have to begin starting to do that. So within the Cloud Center of Excellence, that group, we need to make sure that we've underpinned it with the right degree or level of knowledge to begin working through these things. So we want to make sure that we have the folks from the security side that can help us with all the security considerations, the ATOs are on time, the folks from operations who've thought through what they need, begin moving that. The brain power from my IS2O or application side of the house to actually help them understand what they're doing and make sure they cage their expectations appropriately. So there's a lot of work here to begin laying out this plan, and there's a lot of moving pieces. The reason I cited DC1 zones A and B is there's a lot of expertise that were garnered there. In fact, in our conversation earlier today, one of the things I tasked my team to do is to go back, reach out, and talk to ICE. Understand exactly what they did. And hey, like anyone, you know, plagiarism is the highest form of flattery. Hey, if they had a good plan there, we should use their plan. But let's leverage their expertise. Now, we're going to have to look at those applications that are in there. And if there's rationalization that needs to be done, we're going to have to take those steps and enter into that negotiation process. I think we'll be able to work that through. Underpinning all of this in my organization is the training we're doing for cloud. And we mentioned a cloud stand down that we did earlier in August. And we had outstanding participation. Now, the idea behind that was to create what I call the 101 level. So if you work in my budget organization, what should you know about cloud? Now, my cores are in there, my contracting organization. So they should have a fundamental or a basic level of understanding of what cloud is, so they know what the right questions are to ask as they're monitoring contracts and vendor performance. So we're trying to put together a set of modules. And remember, plagiarism is the highest form of flattery, leveraging what already exists. And this isn't about creating the wheel. It's about using wheels that have already existed. There's a lot of different modules online that you can find to incorporate into our training to help people begin to understand that. And as you start moving into the higher levels of the training we want to do, we'll be focused on fewer and fewer people. So when you get to the next level, what I euphemistically refer to as 202 training, we really want to focus in on, hey, what is the lifting that you people need to do to start moving things to the cloud? Again, at this point in time, we're going to leverage what we can find out there, but we may have to develop some unique training. One of the topics that I keep bringing up with my CISO shop is I want to ensure that security awareness is embedded in everything we do. I suspect on topics like that, we might have to create and maybe even leverage some existing training out there. 302 will be the advanced training. These will be for the folks who are really doing the work. Do I have to provide them or get them certain certifications with cloud service providers so they have that in-depth knowledge that we could do what we need to do? So what I'm getting at here, Jason, is developing an organizational culture, climate, whatever you want to call it, that understands what cloud is, understands the advantages, is smart enough to understand sales talk, because cloud does have a little bit of sales talk to it, and can begin making smart financial, security, and IT operational decisions as we move out in that direction. It's a pretty complicated move, and I really think there's a lot of value in making sure that we've thought this through. So I mentioned to you earlier that we're looking at moving our trusted internet connection from DC to out to the cloud. That would be our first item that we're moving out into a point of presence. And there's a lot of work that goes into that. I would estimate it's at least a year's worth of work for us to maneuver this and get it out there and rebuild it. That begins the process of laying hands on metal and applications to start building that experience and getting things where they need to be. Now, we also talked a little bit about ATOs, authority to operate. And one of the first things I did when I got to DHS is I signed out a reciprocity process. And what I meant by reciprocity is if this component or FedRAMP issued an ATO, we need to leverage the controls from that ATO or FedRAMP, right? Save yourself work. Now, I would say that if you think the work done by that other organization wasn't done right, well, then you probably shouldn't use it. So you don't want to accept things blindly. So we're constantly looking for ways to streamline the process. Now, the other step we took with regards to ATOs is we did something called ATPs, Authority to Proceed. And what I mean by that is rather than waiting for us to deal with every vulnerability or risk that comes up with a particular application or system, we allow it, the system or application, to get on the network sooner. Right? So as soon as we can find a way to mitigate the high vulnerabilities, let's get it on the network and give it a year to clean everything up and mitigate it. And at the end of the year, if it did, we give it a regular ATO, put it into the continuous monitoring process, and off it goes. Right? So we've done this in a way that hopefully will help us speed things up, because that's really the key. Now, the last thing we did in this process is we're almost finished with our reorg. And we did a reorg to be more functional. And what I mean by functional is I looked at the organization and said, you know, we have a lot of my ISSMs and my ISSOs in other parts of my organization. And I wanted to make sure that the process for issuing an ATO did not have setbacks. And by bringing everyone under the same management structure, meaning my chief information security officer or CISO, it allows me to bypass some of that. So if early on in the process, the ISM is beginning to select the tools that they're going to use to control the risk, I want my CISO to be there right at the beginning. And hopefully that will help us take more time out of the process. Also, when it comes to it, the CISO is who I hold accountable mainly for security. And he or she needs to be totally involved in that process from A to Z.
That's John Zangardi, Chief Information Officer at the Homeland Security Department, speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. If you missed any of our interview with him, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insight of the Month. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for September, a new approach in IT modernization, sponsored by Appian on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.